Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hurry into Menards right now and save big money. Miracle-Gro Raised Bed Soil helps you grow bigger, more bountiful plants. It provides the right foundation your plants need to thrive with a 100% organic formula that requires no mixing. Add Miracle-Gro Raised Bed Soil to help your plants grow with organic nutrients you can count on. Visit our garden center or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
It is chaotic, but you almost need to try and keep a cool head in certain moments. Obviously disappointing to find ourselves behind in the game. Yeah, we always had that belief. This is a group of players with real team spirit and great characters, so that sort of never give up energy. And yeah, you could see that went all the way to, what was it, 102 minutes, whatever it was, and it paid off. So
there's all sorts of silly business going on in the penalty area with Leeds player Livramento to Bruno. One last chance, maybe. Bruno's cross. Botman. Oh, they want a penalty. Barnes! Oh, yes! My word! Harvey Barnes has won it! Unbelievable drama! Unbelievable scenes at St James's Park! It's 4-3 in the 102nd minute. 1-0 down, 2-1 down, 3-2 down, and now 4-3 up.
And when the ball came near the box, I mean, you've scored late winners for 4-3 for Newcastle before. What was going through your mind at that moment?
It was chaotic in there, but you've got to try and find that little bit of cool and composure. Try and get a good contact towards goal. There's that many bodies, that much chaos going on. You never know what can happen, and it's crept in, and it's just gone up, hasn't it, in the stadium. So, yeah, as you can imagine, it's bouncing in there. Wasn't as comfortable as we would have liked. It's nice to win games like that. It's also nice to win games comfortably, 2-3-4. No, you know, you look at the end of that, it's a special night, and one that you love being involved in.
Well, yes, indeed. Newcastle United could have made it slightly easier for themselves last night, George, couldn't they? That was astonishing.
I love that quote from Harvey Barnes so much. I mean, if anything absolutely fails to capture what a nonsensical, brilliant, beautiful, mental evening that was. That quote does it. It's like,
it's incredible, isn't
didn't
it?
Make things comfortable for yourselves. Jesus Christ, Harvey. It was horrible. Well, it wasn't horrible, but it was like torture until the end. I mean, you know, Newcastle weren't leading until the 102nd minute or whatever it was. Didn't make things comfortable for yourselves. Oh,
it's
my
insanity,
God. Oh, my God. But just wonderful to hear that.
How are you feeling, Chris, after all that?
Just to be precise, Newcastle were leading in the 101st minute and 48th second was when they finally took the lead, I believe, is when the goal was timed at. How am I feeling? Tired. Still completely befuddled. I just still can't quite work out exactly. I still just, as I was just saying on the Extra Time podcast, I just keep remembering things that happened which I couldn't remember. Like, it didn't take the time. Like Jacob Murphy just standing aloft with the flag in celebration after Barnes, and then Johan Wisse. I mean, the
punching
video of
the crowd,
as much as just punching over and over again, the crowd holding the flag like some sort of gladiator who's just one inside. Yeah, it was just a brilliant night in the end, and ludicrous again how late it finishes, because it's an 8:15 kickoff. The game's, it's nearly 10:30 by the time the game finishes. People are starting to leave because they have to get buses or trains or whatever. Some people I spoke to had missed their only transport home because of that, but didn't care because Newcastle won in the end. So yeah, just absolutely incredible night.
As we know, Eddie Howe loves control, doesn't he? He loves to know exactly what's going on at all times. So I'd imagine he absolutely hated every minute of that last night. That's the least Eddie Howe game ever, isn't it, that?
Yeah, I mean, it is, except that, you know, he talked quite sort of emotionally afterwards about sort of Kevin Keegan and about being heavily influenced as a young player by by Newcastle. By the way, Newcastle played under Keegan. You know, he was a sort of 18-year-old at Bournemouth when Newcastle were going for the title 30 years ago. And that influence lingered with him. And, you know, when he took the job at Newcastle, he spoke about wanting to sort of emulate that team. Now, of course, not in that way, but, you know, not
too
in
close,
way.
Isn't it? That, yeah.
And you got a bit of an insight. I thought, you know, you genuinely got a bit of an insight into how at the end, when that goal goes in, because he lost the plot.
Yeah.
I mean, like everybody else, you know, suddenly, very, very briefly, he's herring down the touchline towards the Gallagher end. He's punching the air, and he almost looks embarrassed when you kind of watch it back. He's then got his serious face on, and goes across to Tyndall, and I'm sure they're talking about the last messages you give to players to try and make sure nothing happens at that point. But he said, I'm not ashamed to admit that he was on a kind of real emotional spike at that point. But yeah, I mean, last night was not a game for control,
it wasn't
just a game for chaos.
Well, we'll get back into that in a bit more detail in a little while. A few quick headlines, and it's a miserable bunch today. George, desperate news circulated around St James's Park last night about Kevin Keegan.
Yes, shocking news a couple of hours before kickoff against Leeds to hear that Kevin Keegan, Newcastle's former player and manager, the architect of the Newcastle we see now, is being treated for cancer. But last night, of course, became the best possible tribute to him. A 4-3, of course, but beautiful songs sung about him, messages on the big screen, and hopefully he will have enjoyed that result.
Yeah, very, very sad, but heartwarming to see the warmth towards KK in the ground. A lovely show of support for Joe Willock as well, Chris.
Yeah, so after Joe Willock's miss against Crystal Palace at the weekend, he received some absolutely vile racist abuse and threats on social media, on Instagram, which Newcastle United came out and condemned and reported to the police. They described it as disgusting, and they called on Meta, the parent company of Instagram, to take some action against that. There were banners held up in the East Stand before the game of Joe Willock and of anti-racism variety, and also then Joe Willock received a wonderful reception from Newcastle fans when he warmed up on the touchline, and he pumped his towards his heart to show his gratitude for the support he's received since.
And completing our trio of bad news concerns that Fabian Schär has done himself a proper nuisance.
It was not a great night for Newcastle United centre-halves, but the real sour point of the whole occasion was the ankle injury to Fabian Schär, which he sustained in a challenge with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. It saw Schär get stretchered off the field and get taken to hospital for scans. Really concerning. The mood on Thursday, as we record, is that it does feel like, or it does seem to be, a bad injury. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. But this, of course, is Schär's final year of his contract, as things stand.
Right then, Newcastle have been very good at throwing away Leeds recently. They nearly threw away Leeds, didn't they, George? Let's attempt to at least analyse that in some sort of way, shape or form, George Corgan. Again,
good luck.
An insane night of football.
Yeah, I mean, analyse, I'm not sure you've come to the right man. But yeah, we can try our best. I mean, honestly, I don't actually know where to start. I think I need a better question than that, Taylor. I've watched back the highlights kind of this morning just to try and sort of make sense of it in my head. And I'm not sure that I can. But you did, you know, you've started that sort of point by talking about throwing away Leeds. And Newcastle didn't do that last night because they didn't have it. And so you actually have to pay tribute to a different part of their character, which is the fact that they clung on and they come back three times. And of course, they managed to mess it up each time they'd come back until the last. But they kept going, they kept plugging away. And by the end, as you two talked about with extra time, you know, they've actually managed to come back from, in a game that they've gone behind in. And but that, you know, that doesn't really tell much of the story, does it?
Let's talk about the match winner, Chris. Harvey Barnes, we heard him at the top of the show, absolutely clutching that last-minute goal. There's a debate now, isn't there, about whether he should be starting on the right or on the left instead of Anthony Gordon. But he was fantastic last night.
He was. He should be in the side, wherever that may be. It was interesting before the match that Eddie Howe was asked directly this question, why is Barnes always on the right? And having almost, I suppose, fudged his answer on this before, for the first time, I think, publicly really said, well, basically, Anthony Gordon doesn't want to play on the right-hand side, so I play Harvey Barnes there because, A, because I think he can do a job, but B, because Gordon doesn't want to be on that side. And I thought that that was revealing in itself, that he went public with that.
Yeah.
And it's almost, I suppose, laying down a challenge to Gordon that you have that left-wing berth, you need to justify it. And there were fits and starts from Gordon, but it was Harvey Barnes who popped up with the two goals, who looked dangerous throughout. And in that moment, it was the cool head. He spoke about cool heads at the edge of the box and to find a way to get that finish off. And it's a really, really good finish. He doesn't fully connect with it, but even so, he manages to get through and into the bottom corner. And yeah, maybe the goalkeeper should save it, but he's the one who forces that. He's the one who tries to get in that position. And he'd had a couple of difficult moments slightly before then, but he hadn't let his head drop. He'd kept going. And I think that he's been in very good form so far this season. That was his fifth Premier League goal of the season. He scored more across other competitions.
Yeah.
And yeah, he is a finisher. That's what he is. It's a main attribute. And he's looked on point, and he did actually look effective from the right for large spells last night, which I don't think he always has done. Howe's defended and playing on the right, saying he does contribute a lot. I've not always been convinced by that. But if it was to be a case of him or Anthony Gordon at the minute, I think that he certainly put his hand up to say that I should be in the starting lineup right now.
Yeah, I do think it's an interesting debate. And I heard you two chatting about that and about sort of whether Anthony Gordon had a good game or not. And I think that's kind of an interesting conversation in its own right. I'm not actually sure how many Newcastle players played brilliantly against exactly. Leeds, which is sort of an interesting thing when you talk about, you know, that sort of type of victory. But I do think Gordon was important. He did have an involvement in the goals, not direct perhaps, but I do still think it's his energy and his running that does sort of set the tone in a lot of those moments. Now, particularly when you've got a striker like Voltimada who can't lead the press. And there were moments last night, Chris and I sort of saw this, where Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall are, you know, shouting at Voltimada to run at the keeper, to put the keeper under pressure when he's got the ball at his feet, and he wasn't doing it. And Gordon does still do that. And I think my concern would be that if you take Gordon out of the team, I don't mean for one-off matches, but you'd lose so much in terms of that pace.
Yeah.
And I do think that was a contributory factor to Newcastle's win last night, the fact you had someone like him prepared to run and run and run, as well as the moments of, you know, more sporadic quality. I wanted to mention that because I did think that was a contributory factor.
It's interesting. We had Tarquin on Discord who said, why is Gordon constantly drifting inside? Joe Linton's having to go out there to give us any width. A few times last night, Lewis Hall looked visibly frustrated as there wasn't an out ball down the line. And Chris Gordon, I'm presuming that he's been told to do this by Eddie Howe, is to drift in and get closer to Nick Voldemata.
Well, that's been part of the idea. And I think that you've seen at the minute that while there's so many benefits now to having both Voldemata and Wissa fit, is that also stylistically you're having to change, and maybe almost it's flipping too much and Gordon's coming inside too much thinking I need to get close to Voldemort and now he's playing, whereas with Wissa it'd be slightly different. And yeah, Hall did seem to get frustrated with him quite a few times last night, and it's different to Barnes. Barnes hugs the touchline a little bit more. He can cut inside, can come inside as well and go off the shoulder. But I think, yeah, just stylistically different players. Joe Linton, yeah, probably not ideal when he does drift out wide. You almost want him coming further inside. But I think also, I just think Leeds made it difficult for them. I think Leeds,
yeah,
the physicality they had, the athleticism, I think it really upset Newcastle's rhythm in general. And that just made the patterns that Newcastle were trying to play, it just really disrupted them.
I do think that was a thing. I mean, looking at that match, it did feel like Gordon was sort of effectively playing as an auxiliary number 10 almost at certain points. That did feel deliberate. And there were times when Chris, you know, I think I turned to Chris in frustration and said, why is Harvey Barnes cutting in from the right when he's right footed and not kind of swinging the ball in? Which, I mean, you say, Chris, that he can cut in from the left. Cutting in from the left is what he does. I mean, that is that, you know, that is where he makes an impact. He cuts in. Everyone knows what he's going to do. He's going to cut in from the left and he's going to try and shoot most of the time. And a lot of the time it works. I sort of thought that, you know, both sides of the pitch ended up being very, very narrow because you've got Gordon sometimes playing as a number 10 and then Barnes cutting in from the right. And I didn't think that kind of always worked. But at least there is variation in Newcastle's wing play, or there could be. You know, I thought sort of by the end of the match, they'd actually sort of complemented each other quite well. But yeah, Harvey Barnes deserves to be in the team. I mean, if, you know, just to reiterate that point.
But then by the end, George, you saw a totally different approach again to wing play. You had Jacob Murphy on pinging the balls across the six-yard box and hoping somebody could get on the end of it. So Newcastle do have very different wingers, don't they? And they're trying to utilise them the best way they can. Chris, let's talk about Bruno Guimarães, the captain. He keeps on delivering, doesn't he? He keeps dragging Newcastle through games.
Yeah, and there was so many times last night where maybe it didn't actually come off and you almost could label him as sort of trying too hard. But he also has that, it's the spirit that is infectious, and I think it drives, it lifts the crowd and it also drives his teammates on. And he almost seemed to visibly go every time Newcastle got an equaliser. He became more emotional each time he got back to the centre circle. And yeah, there was his third successive game, which he scored seven this season. St. James's Park, 8 in the Premier League, Newcastle's top goal scorer in the Premier League, which is impressive in itself. He's really added, it's his best goal scoring season now for Newcastle. And yeah, he even did the little run up to put your heart in your mouth, didn't it, George? He didn't enjoy that very much, did he? The little run up for his penalty.
No, I absolutely hated that. In fact, I can sort of tell you what I was saying.
Can you though?
As he sort of did that, it was like, no, fuck no. It's like, I mean, I'd have been thinking that whoever was taking the penalty. It was just awful, you know.
I've still
just
got PTSD from that one he missed against Palace. And
I know, I just,
that's
I hate
the one, isn't it, where you go, oh God.
But it worked perfectly. He almost delayed until the keepers moved, and so he's got my concern with that kind of penalty is that you delay, and actually then the keeper goes in the direction you're thinking you're going to put it in, and can you stop and change? Obviously, kind of seen with Sunderland last night, what can happen when you do those kind of very sort of deliberate. I mean, I know that was a Panenka by Lafee, but honestly, it just looks so awful.
Funny.
But anyway, I. You can't criticise Bruno because, as you said, Taylor, he's pulling Newcastle through games at the minute, particularly with the other issues Newcastle have had in midfield. And so, yeah, you just have to say another captain's performance.
Let's have a word for Lewis Miley, George, or should that be Lewis Mildini? He will do anything, that boy, won't he? He's an absolute superstar.
Meileckenbauer?
Good effort. I like that. Doesn't scan as well as Mildini, does it? Let's be honest.
Not sure that's gonna catch on. I mean, let's just take a step back again. As Chris said, like, memories keep coming back to you from the match, and again, like, I was just, you know, amid that maelstrom of a football match, Miley, totally astonishing. I mean, absolutely astonishing. He starts again at right back, a position that he'd not practiced before coming into the team, or had a morning's training, comes into the team and, you know, looks like he's been playing at right back all his life. We talked about that almost not perfect performance, but in terms of possession at the weekend, you know, not giving the ball away, extraordinary. Chris wrote a brilliant piece in The Athletic about Miley after that match, after the Palace match, to then move from right back into midfield. So Newcastle make changes and, you know, there's Ramsey on the bench, there's Joe Willock on the bench, but the decision is that, no, we have to keep Miley. We have to keep Miley on the pitch. Livramento goes to right back and it's Miley that goes to the midfield. Now, in one sense, that's totally logical because of how well Miley is playing. It's also a show of faith in him as a player now that, you know, they keep him on the pitch and not change. And then, of course, when Fabian Scher gets injured and Newcastle effectively don't have another centre-half. For this kid to go back into centre-half and close the game out in that position, he's the one that Howe calls over to the bench. You know, like, I'm just absolutely blown away by him, by that maturity, by the intelligence he has. you know, again, I tried to watch him for a minute or two in that position when it started, just to see what he did. And it's like, he is such a clever footballer.
I said this to Chris last night. He seemed so calm, even though there was so much chaos going on around him. He seemed the only player on the pitch. It was incredible to watch him.
I just think it's astonishing. I mean, again, to kind of reiterate something that they talk about him behind the scenes, it's not just the fact that he's a beautiful athlete. You know, you can see how his body's filling out. He's got all the attributes there. It's not just the fact that he has talent on the ball as a midfielder. You know, he's got all the attributes there as well. It's the game intelligence that he's got. That's what marks him out as something very special, to have both of those things. And I'm not saying unique, you know, that makes him unique, but that is what separates the great players from the really good players, to have that intelligence and the talent to deliver. I just think that's incredible. I mean, it isn't the main headline from that match, because so much else went on. But I just think that is extraordinary.
Howe afterwards interestingly said that he has actually trained there more as a centre-back than he has as a right-back, which in itself is fascinating and suggests something that they've seen potentially going forward. Because coming through the youth levels, he was an attacking midfielder almost when he's come through, and he can play in those positions. But basically now you're looking at any right back, centre back, any of the midfield positions. If Newcastle switch formation, he could maybe be a number 10, and you would put him in any of those positions and be confident that he wouldn't just do a job, he'd actually really have a positive impact and effect on the team.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I thought it was great. He's got all of the physical attributes potentially to be that centre back. You don't want him to be at centre half long term, because you want him to be in midfield, which is ideally his position. But yeah, I have to echo that. I thought he was absolutely fantastic again.
Astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. Sandro Tonali, meanwhile, he's just totally offered at the moment, George, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I don't think that's kind of unfair. I think to give mitigation, you have to talk about the standards that he set over the last year or so, and talk about how brilliant he's been. If he hadn't been that brilliant, would we be looking at him now and saying he's totally off? I don't know. But by those standards that he set, he's just not there. And I think there has to be a bit of sort of realism with him. I think players can have dips of form, and, you know, it sort of happens. But yeah, he does look at the moment like a player who needs a reset or a rest.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, you do sort of have to think about just how influential he's been over the last year, and, you know, give him credit for that. But yeah, you have to acknowledge that he's just not reaching those heights.
We had a message off Bren on Discord, Chris. He said, is there anything going on with Tonali behind the scenes, be it carrying a knock, illness, the pressure of pending fatherhood, perhaps? You see little flashes from him, but he just doesn't seem right at the moment. And in my view, getting close to starting on the bench with Miley coming in, if he's not playing left-back, centre-back or goalkeeper by that point.
Well, yeah, I mean, he is an expectant dad. That'll be coming soon. I'm sure that as someone who became father myself, and how much of a change to your mindset and your entire life that is, I'm sure that will be affecting to a certain degree. But I don't know. I don't want to try and presume as to why he may be off it. Some players go through fits and starts as well, and your field life, I'm sure, does affect how you're playing. And it just feels like he hasn't got the right rhythm on the ball. I think off the ball, he's actually performing all right. He's getting around the pitch, and certainly against Palace, he was snuffing out their attacks. It's just on the ball, his decision making doesn't seem to be there. He seems to be clouding his judgment. He's giving it away far more than you would expect.
Yeah,
it almost feels like him and Bruno on the pitch at the moment, and I'm not going into the debate of can they not play together, because we know the category can. At the minute, I don't think they're complementing each other particularly well. I actually think it would be interesting to see if Bruno wasn't on the pitch whether Tonali would benefit from that, because Bruno himself seems to have benefited the other way around. So that is just an interesting point at the moment. For some reason, it just doesn't seem to be clicking quite as it did previously, and maybe that's because Bruno has got the taste for playing deeper again and having more of the ball in that position, getting on it more, and just that really is inspiring him late in games when Tonali isn't actually on the pitch.
By the way, when I talked about, you know, Miley and intelligence, Tonali is absolutely the the embodiment of that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why he's been such a joy to watch over the last 12 months in particular, because he is one of those footballers who is constantly looking, who is constantly scanning, who knows where the ball's going before it comes to him. He makes that side of the game look kind of effortless. He is such a clever footballer.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to give players a break. I mean, we know it's been a tough season. The last kind of few results have been good, but it's been a really tough season. And he would not be alone in losing form this season. And the problem is, when you lose form, you also then lose confidence. You lose that sort of instantaneous decision-making on the pitch because you start to question yourself. And when you start to question yourself, you get into a cycle. I mean, we've seen this happen to players, you know, the true, true greats of the game. Someone like Alan Shearer, you know, under Ruud Gullit, when he doesn't have the confidence of the manager, looks like he's forgotten to be a centre-forward. Bobby comes in, tells him, you're facing the wrong way, son. And first match afterwards, Shearer is back, and it happens to everybody. And so, you know, as fans, as journalists, as, you know, whatever, you have to give players a break sometimes. He will come back because he's absolutely too good not to. But yeah, he's not there at the moment.
On that subject as well, we had an email. Ted says, as a father of a two-year-old with another one on the way in a few weeks, I know my form at work has been spotty the last couple of years since my son was born. Quite rightly, we don't dive too deeply into players' private lives and family lives, but surely we can offer some grace to the young dads in the squad who are going through a monumental shift in their home lives while trying to compete at the highest levels. Exhaustedly, Ted. Yeah, thank you for that email, Ted. There may be something in that. However, Chris, the less said about Malik Chow last night, the better.
Yeah, I asked someone at Newcastle, who's been there for a long while, could they remember a sort of 45-minute performance from a defender worse than that?
And Kasapa, they maybe
they offered up Kasapa, which I don't even think he lasted 45 minutes against Portsmouth. That game, he got hooked after 20-odd minutes. Yeah, I mean, Malik Chow, there has to be an element of fatigue there, potentially. I think it's 23 or 24 games he's been involved in for Newcastle in a row. He's been an almost ever-present since the middle of September. He's played a heck of a lot of minutes, and for 90... Heck, I'm used heck again there, George. For 95% of those minutes, he's been borderline imperious. And then, yes, he's had an absolutely awful 45 minutes where everything went wrong. He sort of held his hands up on social media afterwards. He called a blackout or whatever, a mental blackout. It just didn't work out for him. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, though, I think is causing a lot of problems for a lot of defenders at the moment. He clearly got in Chow's head, and that caused problems. The frustrating thing, I think, for Chow might be he may actually have to play this weekend, and I think it would benefit him to have the FA Cup game off because he just looks like he could do with the mental and physical reset.
By Jupiter, Chris, I agree with you. It's like no one in real life says heck. I'm going to say by Jupiter every time
Is it not
Chris
just because
heck.
It's a brand of sausages that Chris keeps saying it?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Brand of sausage, yeah.
Again, you look at the kind of context of the match last night. He makes that challenge in that whatever it was, the 7th minute, gets a booking. It's a bad challenge. That kind of thing can mess with your head at the best of times. Yeah. The game then descends into chaos. His game descends into chaos. He deserves a break. He deserves credit because he has been absolutely astounding since coming into the team. That was a match to forget, but it all came good in the end. And I didn't sort of say this at the start, but I'm going to say it again now. Last night is a great reiteration of how much I love this team.
Yeah.
You know, they keep going. Even when it's not going right, there's just some great character in there. So I do want to say that again.
Chris, the referee didn't have any control whatsoever, did he?
Yeah, it always feels harsh to dig out an official, but I thought it was just... I mean, it was a very difficult game to officiate because of how end-to-end it was, basketball that it became. But I don't think Michael Salisbury had much control over it. There were some odd decisions. In the second half, I thought he let a lot go at certain points where there were quite a few physical challenges. I think Newcastle's are probably the more generous of the two penalties, so in some ways that was to Newcastle's benefit, but there were the decisions. Newcastle got very frustrated with how long Leeds were taking the shithousing that they brought into it. Very Newcastle.
Taking a piss with those.
And they were doing it from Tindler complained within 3 minutes, but equally that's what Newcastle did at Everton, and that's what Leeds are scrapping and trying to survive, and they're doing exactly what they can to frustrate the opposition. And if you can get away with it, you get away with it, and they managed to get away with it enough with the officials. I thought it wasn't an easy game to officiate, but I also don't think he necessarily had the best fist of it either.
I would counter that by actually offering praise to the referee, because I think without his lack of control, I'm not sure whether Newcastle would have come back into it. Because
well done, ref.
Honestly, because it becomes one of those, ultimately that became one of the great force of nature nights at St. James's Park. Now, I was thinking to myself, in terms of the big decisions, I don't know how many of them he got fantastically wrong, but in some ways that doesn't matter because he became the pantomime villain. There was that sense running through. I mean, look at the way Jill Linton reacted when he didn't get the penalty. Now, I don't think that he should have got a penalty for that. Whether he should have been booked or not, I don't know. But he was absolutely enraged. Then the crowd were enraged.
Yeah.
By the end, you know, having that pantomime villain made the crowd become 12th man. And I know that's cliche. I know it's cliche, but it became that perfect synergy. And the lack of control that the referee showed was completely mirrored by the lack of control that teams didn't have, but it became something of its own self, and it just added to the night, and it forced the crowd to get involved.
On that, I don't know if I've ever heard a crowd celebrate in the dramatic fashion they did, but then also still managed to boo the referee off the field at the end of the game as well. Usually it'll be after a defeat or a draw.
There was something so weird. I mean, in fact, there was two moments when the penalty was given, when Bruno's penalty was given, there was like this massive cheer, and then it was immediately followed by a because like people then have that fear, and then when Bruno starts his run up, there's another intake of breath. Because he's doing that kind of run-up. It was, I thought the crowd were like a character in the drama, and St. James's Park at its best, it's always that way.
As we know, hell hath no fury like St. James's Park scorned, do they? So that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Eddie Howe, well, as elated as he's ever been, which is modestly elated, I think.
It's a rare moment that you get to that sweet taste of victory at the last minute in the game. There's no better feeling as a manager. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. And now I'm back thinking about the next game.
What can you do when you're in that sort of position where there's chaos? I mean, he made the interesting point afterwards, I thought, that chaos suited Newcastle. You know, it's like if you're on the lead in a game, you don't want chaos because you want to be able to sort of dictate the way he's going. But if you're repeatedly chasing a game of football, you know, particularly at somewhere like St. James's Park in that mood, that chaos helps. And I know what he means. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's like as a head coach, it's just completely binary at that point. You know, I suppose you could draw, but you're either going to be devastated or you're going to be elated. It could have gone either way that game, but yeah, it's just a brilliant, brilliant. There's no better way to win a game than that, is there?
So was it fake news for me on extra time that I said that you looked like you had a wet eye, George, at that point?
No, I didn't. I mean, I was caught up in it. I was totally caught up in it. But I was caught up in it with adrenaline and fear and annoyance and wonder. And, you know, I think there was that sense there was emotion about it sort of afterwards and before it with the whole Keegan thing. And obviously we'll talk a bit more about that in a bit. And it was perfect. But no, I was lost. I mean, I knew that I had to write something about it. And so you have that sort of horrible fear as well. And it's like, how the hell do you justify that? So it wasn't that sort of, I mean, I was definitely emotional, but it was the emotion of sort of adrenaline, really.
You lads love a last minute winner, don't you, when you've already started writing all your pieces and typing things up?
Well, I mean, we don't quite have the same deadlines anymore with the Athletic. I mean, but I do always spare a thought for people who work for newspapers who still have to do runners. And I mean, Chris was working on a briefing, you know, we do briefings for the Athletic as well, which are published on the Whistle. And so if you're trying to analyse that as a game, as the game's going on, it's just impossible, isn't it? I mean, it is just impossible.
It certainly is. Finally, a comeback point. Never mind a win, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to slightly disagree with something George said earlier about this team and that they keep going, because they haven't kept going this season. When they've been behind, they've looked defeated, and they haven't, alongside Man City going into this match, were the only side who hadn't come back to get a single point from a losing position so far this season. The last time they'd done that was when Alexander Isak had scored a penalty to equalise at Brighton in May last season. The last time they'd come back to win was February 23rd, 2025, against Nottingham Forest, also a 4-3 victory. So this felt huge, and Howe spoke about it after the dressing room. A lot of the players referenced this. It was a big thing for him that gives them the belief that they can now come back, and that's something that they're going to need going forward. They're going to face difficult moments over the course of the next few weeks and months, given the number of matches they have. They're going to have to fight back from certain positions, and hopefully there's a bit of that affirmation that they can do that.
Well, I mean, really, I take that on board. Really, I express my love for the team. That's what I get. That's what I did.
It was you said that they keep going, but
I am sorry that you have a cold, black, dead heart that has no room for love in it. That makes me sad.
Optimism. Let's think about optimism. We are sixth and cautiously on the up, George.
Yeah, I mean, the league table just looks a lot better. We spoke about January as being moving month. They absolutely had to do this.
Season-defining, Eddie Howe said.
Season-defining. I hope that, you know, that doesn't knock the stuffing out of them and, you know, that they still have some defenders to kind of play. But, yeah, I mean, it just looks a lot better. It takes the sting out of it, takes the chuntering away. There should be momentum behind the team now. I mean, we've talked about finding a way to win. I mean, that was so extreme. But they have. And, by the way, you two mentioned Brentford, because Brentford are fifth. And I, you know, listening to you mention them just made me think again. I mean, that is an astonishing story in its own incredible, right? The only reason I'm bringing it up, of course, is Phil Giles, their sporting director, you know, who was a Geordie, to have lost a manager, to have lost a captain, to have lost their top goal scorer. Brian Mbeumo left and Johan Wisse left. And to do what they've done, they are a club who have a plan. And it seems silly comparing them to Newcastle with all the resources that Newcastle have, but they have this sort of well-established use of data and a well-established plan and really good people in good positions, and it just shows what can be done. But, I mean, I would like to pay tribute to Phil Giles and the job he's done there. He's one of ours, and, you know, we should be proud of him too.
Absolutely. Chris Lane on Discord sent in these 2 points. He said, wasn't that just the most fitting tribute to Kevin Keegan? Get well soon. And number two, has been on the right side of a 4-3 beautiful madness, a sign of Howe's team being winners and not just occasional entertainers. We're going to call them the Wintertainers from now on, I think.
Very good.
Very good. Let's have a quick break. We'll be back with some January transfer window chat.
What does OG stand for? Does it like old geezer or something? Old, I don't know what it is.
He's old geezer, boy, yeah.
So, chaps, the January transfer window is officially open. Martin from the Ham on Discord, fabulous name. Clearly, we need to bring in defensive reinforcements this window. Any early indicators? Centre-half moving up on the list of priorities, George. Do we think that could potentially be Fabian Schär's Newcastle career over?
Well, I really hope not, because that would be a very, very sad ending to somebody who's been a wonderful servant to Newcastle. That's the cliche, isn't it? But, you know, somebody who predates the takeover, arrived under Rafa Benitez, obviously found himself on the outside under Steve Bruce for long moments, but, you know, has risen with the club, you know, still nobody can do what he does on the ball, and, you know, just somebody who's been absolutely brilliant. I hope not. Eddie Howe was asked about his contract position before the match and did sort of say that there'd been early chats about what they do. Now, of course, Schär's own opinions on that would be interesting or important too. There have been links with him to go to Germany, but his contract is up. For now, I think it's a bit too early to say that there's been any sort of change in terms of the club's transfer situation. You know, that's certainly, again, that's what Howe said immediately after the game. It was too soon to draw any conclusions. Newcastle do have a good collection of centre-halves when they're all fit. Obviously, they're not all fit at the minute. You know, Dan Burn is out too. Jamal Lascelles is there in the background. It does just feel a little bit too early to kind of give a definitive answer on that. Newcastle don't want to do stuff for the sake of it. I think the first thing is to see what scans say, what the prognosis is with Schär. The initial news does not look good, so we'll have to see. But as things stand, they're saying nothing's changed for now.
Chris, midfield, is that remaining a primary desire?
It is, alongside sort of defence. I mean, centre-half, we will find out in the next week or so whether that is really jumping up the priority list. But left-back had been sort of the primary defensive area. Someone who could cover in at centre-back as well would have been ideal, someone a bit versatile. But a midfielder, creative midfielder, someone like Keith Smith today, is that Alkmaar who they really like, but that would basically require someone like Joe Willock to go for someone to come in. At the minute, it's looking unlikely that it'll be midfield if Newcastle are going to make any signings, and there isn't even any guarantee of that. I think it'll probably actually be in defence. Dian Methley at Toulouse is someone they've watched and they've been heavily linked with. There have been reports that they're basically readying a bid. My information is that is premature, that they do have watched him and like him, but he's had some surgery on a knee. It's not like he's had a serious injury. It's to sort of to clear out the knee a little bit, clear a previous injury.
Yeah.
And so he's out for a month. But beyond that, Newcastle haven't decided whether he's necessarily the player that they want. He's a sort of physical, athletic left back. Do they want someone in that mould? Do they want someone more technical? Do they want someone with greater experience? He can also play at centre-back. But if you look at the situation they are in now, if Newcastle decide they need centre-halves, what is the likelihood of Eddie Howe playing a 19-year-old who's primarily a left-back or left-wing-back at centre-half between now and the end of the season, who's never played in the Premier League before? I'd say that the given his previous record, the chances are slim, so it's probably not ideally what he would want if they need a centre-back. So everything very much at the minute is Howe's used the word being opportunistic and also basically reacting to the injury situation, and I think that's what Newcastle are going to do in the next couple of weeks. I don't think they're going to rush into anything in that regard.
I know it's hard to predict this, but do you think they will make moves? Newcastle, you know, traditionally keep their cards pretty close to the chest when it comes to transfers, and sometimes something just comes out of nowhere, Chris, doesn't it?
Well, I haven't signed anyone in either of the last, or seen anyone senior out of the last two January windows. I think there is a reasonable chance that does happen again, that all the noises are sort of playing it down, really. They are very much looking in that defensive area, and it's whether they can find someone who they think can have an immediate impact between now and the summer, but also who essentially would have been a long-term target and they're getting for a decent price. I would say at the minute I'm probably 60-40 that they don't do something. But as I say, it'll partly depend on share. It'll depend on Dan Byrne. Howe suggests that he's back on the training field and could be. So you have to think he's going to be back the next 2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly sooner. But
fingers crossed.
Even then, Newcastle are still stretched relatively thin, given Jamal Lascelles is not 100% fit at the moment. So there is a desire to do something if it's the right move. But Newcastle aren't just going to do something for the sake of it. I would like them to, because I think it would be positive. I've said this before, but I don't think that just the vibes. I think that's what the young people say now. Just for vibes, I don't think they're going to sign.
Don't ever do that again, please. Don't. That's horrible. It's the kind of thing my 14-year-old son would say, and I don't expect that from you, Chris, a grown man.
I'm very down with
that. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like I have no idea it was on the pop charts, and my brother and sister were listening to this.
Chris. The pop charts. The hit parade, is it? What time is it? It's 12:30, Chris. It'll be biscuits and a cup of tea soon, won't it? My God. Honestly, right, let's move on quickly, please, before I lose my mind. Let's have a quick update from the lasses. The winter break's over. The lasses are back in action on Sunday for the first time since December 21st in a mouth-watering tie against Birmingham City at the Gateshead International Stadium. Fourth host and second, with Newcastle able to pull level on points with Birmingham in that second automatic promotion position if they put a win on the board. Newcastle are only separated from third place Bristol City by goal difference as well. It's very tight up there. They've clawed back ground with four wins in their last five league games, having won all three matches since Tanya Oxtoby arrived. They last lost in the league at home against Charlton Athletic on September 28th. Jordan Nobbs has scored in Newcastle's last two league games against Southampton and Portsmouth, and she, alongside Charlotte Wardlaw, have been nominated for the PFA Women's Super League 2 Fans Player of the Month Award for December. That's a mouthful, mine, isn't it? Good Lord.
I was thinking that, yeah, as you were reading it.
I managed to get through.
But no, it's great. Let's hope the lasses can start 2026 in style. That feels like a cliched six-pointer against Birmingham, really. Certainly don't want to lose it at home, but if they can win it, then suddenly,
yes,
having been miles behind in the promotion race in October, really, they would then actually, they'd probably be behind still on goal difference, but suddenly they'd have the momentum behind them.
A couple of wins and you start to shoot up that league table and,
yeah,
and things all start to look a little bit more rosier, don't they? Anyway, let's move on. Newcastle, of course. So, looking ahead to this weekend in the FA Cup, Chris, mass changes potentially should Eddie Howe rotate a bit for this game, do we think?
Yes, and I think he will. I've said for a while he should. And rotation, I mean, defensively, it just doesn't look quite as good as maybe it could previously, but there are quite a few players you can bring in, and I don't think necessarily quote-unquote weaken the side, but give them minutes that they desperately need as they're coming back, and also gives rest to some of them who are in the side. So Jacob Ramsey, Joe Willock, Tino Livramento start a game. Kieran Trippier, you could have them on either side. Centre-back, it's difficult to see who can necessarily play in those positions, who on earth's going to play there. Does Alex Murphy, someone like that, come into the equation, either at full-back or centre-back? Can you put Malik Chow out again? Can Lewis Miley play there and start a match? I mean, Howe suggested he would have no problem in doing so after the game. Would you want to do that? Is Botman fit enough to start? Because I thought he looked like he wasn't quite physically ready yet. And then up front, does Voltimata continue? Does Wissa come back in? I suspect it might be Voltimata, and then Wissa starts against Man City. You could change the wingers. Jacob Murphy come in to start. So yeah, he has options there. I think that you'll see at least half a dozen changes, but I don't think that'll drastically weaken them. I imagine Bournemouth will make quite a few changes as well. I expect a lot of changes.
Obviously, the fixture schedule, George, is pretty tight at the minute. A weekend off next month might not be the worst thing ever, but I wouldn't want to go out of the FA Cup at this stage, definitely not.
No, I mean, I think Chris has sort of been saying fairly consistently that something has to give, and I haven't necessarily agreed with him, but I'd kind of do agree with him now. I think particularly in, after that match against Leeds, they've got a League Cup semi-final on Tuesday, the first leg against Manchester City. That has to be the priority. That, Newcastle have to be able to go into that game with their strongest possible available lineup and, try and get a lead if they can. I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to say. Yeah, I don't want the Bournemouth match against the FA Cup to feel like it's lost before it starts. I think, we've seen way too much of that at Newcastle in the past. And that's partially been an issue of attitude. You've known that the club didn't really give a toss from the top down about cup competitions because that just wasn't what it was about. We know it's different now. I agree with Chris. I think Newcastle should be in a position to pick a decent team that is capable of winning, but they absolutely do have to make changes and big changes for that match because people will be, you saw. I don't think it was just time wasting when you saw half of the Leeds team go down with cramp and Newcastle players were dead on their feet at the end as well.
Yeah.
They have to have something in reserve for Man City. We also know that PSV Eindhoven at home is the week after with a big match at Wolves. I hate talking about priorities. I absolutely hate it. But this has to be, for now, in this current run of games, this has to be bottom of the list in terms of priorities. Hopefully Newcastle will do enough to get through.
And Chris, Eddie Howe doesn't really like facing his former club, does he? Let's be honest.
No, and I don't just mean that in terms of it being a club that means a heck of a lot to him. Heck, I'm used to it again.
By Jove. Oh, I've gone from by Jupiter to
Crivens.
But also he's faced them 8 times as Newcastle United head coach in the league. He's faced them 7 times and never won. Drawn 5, lost 2. The only time he's won was in a cup game at St James's Park in the Carabao Cup 4th round in December 2022.
So you're saying there's a chance, victory. Chris?
So I'm saying there's a chance. And he can't get the Premier League monkey off his back against Bournemouth this weekend. They're one of a few. I think it's only them and Liverpool now. He hasn't beaten sort of the ever-present or the teams he's been in a lot. But he can get one over in his former side, hopefully.
The Premier League monkey. I would love the Premier League.
The official Premier League monkey. Take them around the grounds on a weekend.
Yeah.
That would be brilliant.
Do they have to have every single kind of animal, or is that the Premier League's animal of choice? And you have to kind of walk around with it on your back.
Premier League monkey. Outstanding. What would we call him?
I like that.
Maybe you could write in and let us know what you think we could call the Premier League.
Champions League? Champions League? No. Yeah. No, not good.
Yeah. Antoine Semenyo, he's pretty much on his way to Man City, isn't he, after getting a last-minute winner against Spurs. So we're not going to have to deal with his nonsense, George.
Yes, that is great news. I mean, that's great news, unless, of course, he then immediately comes into Man City's team for the League Cup.
Could he be cup-tied for Man City, though? He's played for Bournemouth in the Carabao Cup this season. Could he potentially be cup-tied? Chris?
He must be cup-tied.
I assume so,
Well, there you go.
He must be cup-tied.
There you go. All good. Right, then get in touch. The email is podnatine@gmail.com over on Twitter, X and Blue Sky, as well as on Discord for subscribers. We'll be back this weekend with a Bournemouth FA Cup match day pod. Thank you very much for your time, chaps. Thank you, George.
You're very welcome. Yeah, let's catch our breath, maybe hope for a slightly more straightforward one this weekend, or do we want to embrace the chaos for the wintertainers?
Absolutely. Let's just go full chaos. Full chaos.
Let's just go full KK.
What do we think, Chris?
Well, I'd quite like a comfortable 3-0 Newcastle victory against Bournemouth on Saturday, where it's wrapped up by half time, and
nice.
I can just easily write something that would be nice. I don't think my heart can take any more of the processed meat that I eat, or B, Newcastle United. So,
all right, Celine Dion, calm down.
Well, you know, that would be the other side. If we're talking, you know, Kevin Keegan, that would be the other side of that. You know, let's get into them early, nice big lead.
No silliness.
And of course, we do send all of our love and positive thoughts to Kevin Keegan and his family. He is the man that made this version of Newcastle. He made it possible. He was a brilliant player for Newcastle at the end of his career, came back to manage them when they were facing oblivion, really. I was alive then. I was a Newcastle fan and I was going to games. And it was a bleak, bleak time to recognise something in Newcastle, to have this sense of beautiful optimism that he carried around with him. And then for 3 or 4 years later, for Newcastle to be challenging at the top with Manchester United gave us memories that, you know, I will never, ever forget. He is the man I compare everything to at Newcastle. He is my touchstone. He was an extraordinary manager for us. He influences the club in every single possible way. He is an absolute legend. Get well soon, King Kev.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think we can leave it in any better place than that. We shall be back very, very soon. Take care, everybody out there, and thank you for listening again to Pod on the Time. Cheers. Bye-bye.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.